Accession number 10790, reel 1.
Mr. Kennett, reel 1. Can you tell me when it was and how it was that you came to be in the Commandos, please?
After Dunkirk, coming back to this country, I was in the Royal Engineers, and it was at Blandford in Dorset that a notice appeared on the order board asking anyone to volunteer who could ride a motorcycle, drive a car, speak a foreign language or some part of a foreign language, prepared to do intensive training for specialized work to come. And I volunteered for that because I felt that there was something in this that I could get my teeth into.
Were you bored with ordinary soldiering?
I was bored with the Royal Engineers, I'll be very honest. My objection to the Royal Engineers was that in France in 39 it was okay to be an engineer, but you never seemed to be able to hit back at anything when people were hitting you. So I decided I needed something more, and I thought that from this special training and so on, for special duties, I thought there might be something in this.
Was this easy to get into the Commandos?
No, you were selected. I had to go to Bovington Camp and go through an interview with three officers out of the Royal Tank Regiment. One who latterly became a VC in the Western Desert.
Who was that?
Mr. Gardner. Mr. Gardner, I think he was a Lieutenant Gardner when I saw him. He could have been promoted after that, but he was definitely a VC in the Tank Regiment. The selection after that was, well, we'll let you know. And within a couple of days, I was told by a very irate major Royal Engineers that I had been selected to join this special unit. He didn't want me to go. However, I'd been called for by that time, so I went. And we went to Weymouth in Dorset. And there we started to form a unit. There were many of us, I would say about 200 altogether, that formed there, or gathered there. And we gathered on the pier at Weymouth. That was to be our headquarters, where all the cross-channel steamers used to go from at that time, but obviously that had stopped because the war was on. So we used the pier as our headquarters, and then we were formed into troops. And to my complete surprise, we had a Royal Engineer troop, which I joined. It was quite surprising. I didn't think there would be as many Royal Engineers, but there were. There was a whole troop of us. And one of the officers I can always remember was Mr. Gardner. And we had a Mr. or Lieutenant Lewis, who latterly became Lieutenant Colonel Lewis in the Commandos. And from there on we did basic training, weapon training, rifle, Bren gun, know how to throw a Mills grenade, and after that it was complete physical fitness, physical training, swimming long distances in the sea from Weymouth Pier across the bay as far as you could go and back again, and so on and so forth. And it really was a marvellous time. It really was. The training was, that was the beginning of the Commando Association or Commando Troops, and it really was wonderful.
Were you looking forward to getting into action?
Oh yes, that was the whole idea. We were told that something would happen, but we got to be trained first of all. And from Weymouth we were put on a train and we were sent up to Inverary in Scotland. And that's where we came to grips with the mountains and the hills and the forests and the rivers and the good weather and the bad weather too. And we also did boat training there as well.
Was there any part of the training which you didn't like or found difficult to cope with?
No, I liked it all. Every bit of it. It was good. Everything was good. We were well looked after. We weren't encouraged to go sick or anything like that. We had to sort of fend off colds and things of that nature, which we did. And we took everything in their stride. Everyone took everything in their stride.
Were many of the recruits thrown off the course, returned to unit?
There were some. There were some. Not terribly many, but there were some. I couldn't really tell you how many. I think very few, really, but there were some.
What qualities would they have lacked?
I think it was possibly discipline. Not being able to accept that they had to do certain things when called upon to do it. They either reneged from it or they failed in the test of doing it. And this is what caused them to be returned to their own units.
Were there many accidents on the training?
Not that I know of. I never saw anything, no. Nothing at all.
Were there any outstanding personalities whom you can recollect on the training courses?
Yes, I can indeed. I always remember Mr. Gardner, of course. He stands out in my memory, and Lieutenant Lewis at that time. They were very good. And we had a Lieutenant Colonel, Colonel Dudley Lister. Colonel Dudley Lister was quite a firebrand. I'd never met a man like that before, but he knew his stuff and he was good. He was an ex-boxer from the army. I think he was a champion at some stage in his career, but he really was a good man.
In what ways was he a firebrand?
Well, he didn't take lightly to idiots or people who argued with him or argued against their seniors. He encouraged you in every other way to be a man, to be physically fit, and obviously you had to be fighting fit. That was his main object. I remember we were issued at some time after that with the fighting knife, which was quite a formidable weapon, and it was sewn to the outside of our battle dress trousers. We were quite proud of it, but we were warned at the time that never would this have to be drawn among people. Needless to say, one or two accidents did occur whereby men did make misuse of their fighting knife, threatening other people, I believe, and for that reason they were thrown out of the commando units, completely thrown out, finished. And I think it was quite right. I always tried to behave and tried to obey orders that were given, and I found that that was the best way to succeed, because I wanted to succeed, and I think I did in later life succeed.
Where else did you train besides those two places?
Well, we went on various exercises, of course. We trained in Cornwall and in the Lake District. We did potholing in the Lake District. I always remember that. I didn't like that. I never did like going underground. But we did it, nevertheless. Potholing in the Lake District, canoeing on rivers, you know. Windermere was used. Various other exercises in that area, and even going on short 2 and 3 day trips. We went to Arran on one occasion, the Isle of Arran, and did some training there. It was all very good.
What was the first operation that you took part in?
The first operation I went to was Lofoten, the first Lofoten Islands, where we were based in those days in Troon, in Ayrshire. And it was from there that we went up to Greenock and on board ship and went to raid the Lofoten Islands. That was a good testing point, I think.
Can you tell me in detail what you remember of the raid as you participated in it?
Yes. I always remember I was in what was called E Troop, which was a mixed group of men from all different regiments of the British Army, and vividly I remember that the shoe leather that we had to wear were rope-soled boots. They virtually were boots with rope soles, which proved a disaster because they were very, very slippery on ice, and the Lofoten had plenty of ice and snow. But it was a good starter going to Lofoten, and we did quite well. We blew up the objectives that we had to go to there, which were fish oil plant and so on and so forth. And we brought back some Norwegian people who wanted to leave and join their own forces that were in this country at that time, but very small. And one of the figures on board the boat going and coming back, I remember very vividly, a man I saw, and I often wondered who he was, and it happened to be what was later our brigadier, Lord Lovett. He was just an observer at that stage, I think.
You said before that you were in RE Troop. When, yes. When were you transferred from RE Troop to E Troop?
Well, we got mixed up, you see. They decided that it was wrong to have a complete troop of Royal Engineers, that so many Royal Engineers should be seconded to each troop. And basically there were maybe four that went to one troop and four to another and so on. And that's how we got the idea, or the powers that be had the idea, that they would have people in the troop who knew something about explosives and could probably handle them quickly. And that was the reason why they split us up.
Had you specialised in explosives in the RE?
In the beginning, the early part of the war, yes. That was my main duty. I mean, I was a sapper in the Royal Engineers, and it was blowing up bridges in Belgium and in France coming back before Dunkirk. So I knew something about explosives, gun cotton mainly in those days.
What did you personally do on the Lofoten raid?
Very little, really. I just went ashore with the troop that I was with. We landed. We went into the village and sorted out one or two odd Germans who I think were quite prepared to surrender anyway at that stage. It was very, very cold there. I always remember that. Very, very cold. And then we were welcomed by the local people, and we virtually did all the work we had to do within an hour and a half. And after that, it was just a case of withdrawal, and which was what was intended. And we brought back some civilians, as I said before, that wanted to join the Norwegian forces in Great Britain. And it really was a very good opening exercise, you might say.
So your morale must have been sky high after.
Well, it was indeed, yes. I mean, you felt that you had achieved something. At last, you were doing something, you were hitting back. This was the whole object of my personal joining the commandos, was to be able to hit back, having been thrown out of France as we were.
Which other raids did you go on before the Dieppe raid?
We tried two or three. I went on a raid to Boulogne with some Canadian troops. It wasn't terribly successful. I never really knew why, but we didn't even make a landing. It was, in my opinion, poorly organized. So we had to come back again. And then
was that before or after the Lofotens?
After Lofoten, yes, after.
Do you remember the month?
I really couldn't say. I thought it was around about the month of May.
Because Lofotens was in March, I think.
Yes, oh, this was much later, though. It would be a good year or two after when we went to Boulogne with these Canadian troops.
So in 1942, or?
Approximately that, yes.
Sorry, you were going to talk about another raid?
I was, we were primed for various things, but nothing really took place. Very often it was because the timing was wrong, or very often that it was cancelled for political reasons. It was a wee bit exasperating when you were ready and then it was called off. So nothing really serious took place. I once went on one to the Dutch coast. Again, it was a bit of a fiasco. And we didn't land. We just came back. There seemed to be a lot of little things that went wrong. Why? I still don't know to this day. I've never been able to find out. But all this, of course, after that, it was a complete question of training to get the maximum out of every single person for something better to come. And it did come with Dieppe.
Before we talk about Dieppe, I think you also were on another small one to the Channel Islands.
Ah, yes, that's true. We sailed to the Channel Islands from Weymouth. It was, again, not very exciting. We did land, but never saw anybody, and came away again.
Do you know which of the Channel Islands it was?
I think it was Guernsey.
Did you know what the objective was on that one?
Try and catch a prisoner. This was the main object. Try and take prisoners. If we could bring back a prisoner who could be cross-questioned by the higher authority to give away something, this was the whole idea, what the morale was like in various places. This was the principal object. And I think also to let the German authorities know that we were about, that somebody was about that cared and was going to do something eventually.
Now, coming on to the Dieppe raid, can you tell me in detail about the raid as you remember it, step by step?
Well, there were two commanding officers, or four commando, Lieutenant Colonel the Lord Lovett. He was to land at Orange Beach 2, which was to the right. And Major Mills Roberts, who was in charge of another party, and that was to Orange Beach 1. And he was the centre. The attack was to be made at a place called Varongeville. A gun battery had to be destroyed. And I was actually in Lord Lovett's, or under Lord Lovett's command. And we landed on the right, as I said before, And the boat, or the LCA boat that I was in, was commanded by Lieutenant Veazey. A strong fighting troop was sent with him, and I went as a reserve radio operator. They already had one radio operator, but if anything happened to that man, then they needed to have someone to take over, and I was the reserve radio operator. Fortunately, the reserve radio, as a reserve radio operator, I wasn't needed for that purpose, but I was able to help because Lieutenant Veazey found some telephone lines, and he said to me, go up that pole and cut those lines, and I was able to get up the pole, and I had pliers with me anyway, and I cut the lines, and these were lines going to the gun battery. So that all helped, I suppose. It was a very successful operation. I think we had 10 men killed, and I think 10 were missing. That I could never find out about. Possibly 9 or so badly wounded, and 4 or 5 slight wounds. I personally was never hit at all. But on the way, when we were coming back, I found that a good friend of mine, Troop Sergeant Major Williams, had been very badly wounded. And I was lucky enough to be able to carry Charlie, his name was Charlie, on my back away down to the boats to get off. And he was bleeding very profusely from his chest. It was in a bad way. But we got him. I got him back onto the landing craft, and then taken out to. I think it was a destroyer. He came back on to New Haven Harbour, and always remember when I came off also at New Haven Harbour, there were some people on the dock there waiting to receive us, and a medical officer said to me, "You go over there to the ambulance." And this was because I had a lot of blood on my back, and he thought I was badly wounded, and it was Charlie's blood that was there. So Charlie, whenever I see him now, he's still alive, he says to me, "You're my blood brother." So in that respect, I suppose, I was quite lucky, and Charlie's still alive, as I say.
Did you actually see any Germans killed?
Oh, yes. I mean, you could see them all right. Oh, yes. They were there. I mean, they were visible in the gun pits and so on, you know. Pillboxes. Oh yes, I mean they were killed all right. The weapon that Lord Lovett used in his attack on the back end of the battery were purely British commando troops with the bayonet, and a lot of Germans were killed with the bayonet. So I mean they were very visible. But it was a complete success. The whole thing was a complete success. All the guns were destroyed. All the shells that they had were all blown up. Everything. Complete success. It was the one part of the Dieppe raid that was successful. As we know now, I mean, the poor fellows in the Canadian frontal attack on Dieppe town, that was a complete disaster. And even 3 commando on our left flank who attacked the other part, they weren't too happy either. But they did achieve success, nevertheless.
Did you see any French civilians?
Yes. There were 2 or 3 people came out of their houses, you know, wanting to know what was going on, what was happening, were you staying, and somebody offered us something to eat, and we said, no, we don't want it to eat. And they told us that they thought we were starving in Britain, and we said, no, we're not starving at all. There were quite funny incidences like that that took place. But looking back on it now, I mean, without any question of doubt, the skill of Lord Lovett in directing his troops was really fantastic. He knew exactly what to do. Very great success. We had one VC from Dieppe, Captain Porteous, who won the VC at Dieppe, and rightly so, he deserved it.
Did you see what he did?
Well, I didn't see what he did personally, but there have been a lot of books written about it since, and he was wounded, but carried on, and he did his job beautifully in the gun pits. He was a very, very fine officer. Very fine officer indeed.
Did you bring any prisoners back?
No, I don't think so. There could have been an odd one. I don't know if four commando did. I don't think they did. But I think that three commando possibly did. But we didn't. I'm pretty certain of that.
Were there any incidents that happened on the raid which you can recount?
Nothing terribly much. I don't think so. I mean, everything went very smoothly. There were no great problems. I always remember the radio sets that we had were the old number 18 radio sets, and they were quite heavy things to carry, and I always felt that they were very vulnerable. But no, they did their work very well. I mean, we got our messages back and forward, that there didn't seem to be any problem at all. I think that's about all I could say about Dieppe, really.
In 1943, I think you had an exercise called Brandy Ball.
Yes.
On the Cornish coast.
Yes.
What do you remember about that?
Again, it was pretty rugged from a training point of view. It was tough. An awful lot of cliff climbing and so on and so forth, abseiling. The boat work coming in from the sea and so on. The sea wasn't particularly kind. It was choppy and quite a swell going. It was kind of dangerous, I would have said, but nevertheless it was very, very good training. I mean, it really did help. You had to be fit, and if you weren't fit, I mean, you would go under, but nobody did. It worked out very, very well indeed. There were a few accidents, minor accidents, but nobody really suffered greatly.
What did you personally do on that operation?
Oh, I just went along as a radio operator, and I carried one of these 18 sets on my back, and it was a bit difficult, but you were hauled up the cliff rather than you went up on your own steam. You were hauled up because they knew fine that you got this thing to carry. And it worked very well indeed.
Now, when it came to D-Day,
yes,
Four Commando assumed quite a different role.
Yes, indeed.
Can you tell me what you remember about D-Day and Normandy as you participated in it?
Yes, I was attached to B Troop number 4 Commando, which was the heavy weapons troop. Mortars, 3-inch mortars, and machine gun. That's the Vickers machine gun. And we went over from Southampton in the Maid of Orleans. And we knew where we were going. We were very well briefed in advance. We had all seen the sand table laid out before us of the coastline, where we were going, what we were expected to do. We knew exactly what our target was, a gun battery on the coast. And then after securing and destroying that, we had to go inland and so on. I remember